CSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is not an encore presentation.
I can assure you, if it was an encore presentation and we had to be up by 6, none of us would be here.
No. I was not awake at 6 a.m. this morning, that's for sure. Anyways, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Happy Labor Day to you all. Our final 2-hour Saturday morning show. We've made it through the summer unscathed. Starting next Saturday, we go back to our usual 12 noon to 3 o'clock time slot. So we are going to increase our output by a solid 33% next week.
Richie, I thought for a second Drew was about to announce that he was locking me and you out.
And starting his own show.
Well, let's be honest. Richie and I already considered locking you out of the studio earlier today. When you just went to get us some drinks, Richard's like, lock the door.
Lock the door.
Well, no, the Illegal Curve CBA doesn't expire until after the 2014-15 season.
I saw that was your thing on Twitter yesterday, is that even if there's a lockout, we still have to pay you 2 cheeseburgers or something?
It was 3 cheeseburgers, a small drink, and fries. And
who negotiated that contract? That was a negotiated contract. No way you're worth 3 cheeseburgers.
No, Ronald McDonald negotiated that contract.
Well, I'll tell you what, then he went and hamburglared somebody on that deal.
It's a good deal, and I'll be happy to take it.
Yeah, well, sure, you got 3 cheeseburgers out of it. It doesn't take much.
A day.
Happy.
A day.
Yeah, 3 cheeseburgers
a
day.
It's a good deal.
Yeah, well, except for your heart.
Yeah, I mean,
it's really nothing different than the current.
I'm morbidly obese, but that's fine.
Well, no, the difference is we have to pay for those cheeseburgers, whereas if he didn't have that deal, he'd have to pay for those cheeseburgers out of pocket.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Can you buy in bulk at McDonald's?
I think there's a limit. No, you can't.
Okay. Anyways, welcome to the program. We have a jam-packed 2 hours for you on this Saturday morning, coming up in about 90 minutes' time. Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail is going to join us. The NHL came out with their national TV deal, or national TV schedule.
Yep.
We'll talk to Bruce Daubigan about it. I mean, you can probably ignore at least the first 6 weeks of that schedule as things look right now.
Yep.
But we're going to get into the CBA next segment. We're going to start with Zach Bogosian. Assuming that the Jets play at some point this year, they're going to be without Zach Bogosian probably, unless the season starts sometime after January. Out for a minimum of 3 months, likely 4 to 6 months, after undergoing surgery on his right wrist, a chronic ligament problem in his right wrist. First of all, what does this mean for the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, Drew, I guess it depends really on when the team starts playing. We've heard as little as 3 months or as long as 6 months. If the season starts relatively, I mean, right now we're at September 1 today.
Yeah.
So say he's out for 3 months and they don't get started till December, then you're fine. You're completely fine. If he's out 6 months, well, it's a huge effect on the team. And let's be honest here. I mean, your top four would be decimated because after Bufflin and Enstrom, who aren't the best defensive defensemen, you have the likes of Hainsey and Stewart and Klitsam and Postma.
Those guys are not suited for a number three role.
They're not suited for a number three role.
And he's
probably your most most dependable defensive defenseman. So you lose that, and you lose a top four guy. You have to elevate somebody else into a top four role. Never mind the fact that the teams in your division, like Carolina, have added big time offensive talent. Washington has Ribeiro. Obviously, they've lost Semin, but Tampa looks strong. You're going to play all those teams. You're going to play the Pittsburghs, the Phillies, and in the conference, you're in trouble. So Jets fans probably actually might prefer a lockout in terms of possibility of team success, because that's about as bad as an injury as you're going to get in terms of duration. Never mind the fact that he is a huge contributor to what the team's trying to do.
And the truth of the matter is, if he continues to develop as he did last year,
yes,
you expect him that he isn't going to be, I mean, he might play on your quote-unquote second pairing, but he might turn into the best defenseman on the team.
Yeah, playing against the toughest competition. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so this this isn't losing, a 3-4 guy in the traditional sense of the word. This is losing your best defensive defenseman,
mm-hmm.
And the guy that you can really, a smooth skater, a guy you can match up with.
That's
against,
right. Against anybody, really.
Against anybody. Yeah. And he's not replaceable in terms of anything that's available on the market.
Nope.
Now, the Jets might go out and they might try and, as opposed to bumping up all their 4, 5, and 6 guys, you know, to a role they're not suited to play.
You're going to be trouble. Like if you're putting out there as your, you know, you go into the season, and I was assuming that you have Klitsma 7, Postma 6, maybe Postma, maybe playing with Hainsey to kind of get this, make sure, or Postma with Stewart, whatever it may be, in Hainsey with Bogosian. Regardless, mm-hmm. Now you're playing Hainsey with Stewart, maybe switch sides there. Hainsey with Stewart, or are you going to put Post? That's not good. You don't want to be lining up against Carolina's, you know, if they spread those stalls around, yeah. And depends on what they do, or Washington's, you know, Ribeiro line or a Backstrom line.
If you're playing in Carolina and you don't get last change,
that's right.
And you have the stall, you know, the two stalls playing together, you know, on a line, and you have them up against, you know, Hainsey and Stewart, that is a recipe for disaster.
To be honest, you have to think if this injury, I mean, if they come back relatively quickly in the CBA, we'll talk about that later on in the show, you have to think that the possibility of Enstrom and Byfuglien being split up is very high.
Absolutely.
I think you have to do it, to be honest.
Yeah. Even if the lockout goes as long as people are saying it could go, which, you know, we'll talk about this a little bit later when we talk about the non-news surrounding the CBA, but let's say that, you know, the season doesn't start till early to mid-December. He's still probably going to be out, and you're absolutely right. He's going to be out there on the number one penalty-killing unit. We know that he improved a lot last year. And, you know, Drew, back to your point, I mean, Zach Bogosian, as far as the Winnipeg Jets go, is their future number one defenseman. Now, he's got a lot of improvement to go. He's not at where a guy like Drew Doughty is, for example, but they envision...
He never will be.
He never will be, but they're envisioning Zach Bogosian to be a number one defenseman, and he's very young still. He's only 21 years old, and he's in the last year of his two-year deal that he signed last summer.
That's right.
And for him, it's obviously got to be frustrating, you know, because, again, these are the crucial years for his development, but, you know, this injury happened, and... You know, Kevin Cheveldayoff said it, you know, in his release that we posted on illegalcurve.com. This is an injury that he was struggling with dating back to his time with the Atlanta Thrashers.
Well, sorry for interrupting there, Ez. This is the same injury that caused him to miss some time last year. And, when the words chronic, you know, are involved, chronic means it's not going to get better unless you really do. No amount of rest is going to make it better.
So I guess the next question, obviously,
is the timing.
Yeah.
Yeah, is why are we doing that? Why is the surgery being done now, as opposed to, especially if you, I mean, we're not privy to what the medicals say or anything, but the season ended what, 5 months ago?
Yeah, if you count May, June, July, August, September, that's 5 months, and he'd be ready for the season,
right?
In theory.
Now, but obviously, did they not know it was a chronic injury at the time? Maybe they thought that, you know, an off season of rest and
exactly,
you know, would solve the problem, and only then after he starts working out does a flare up again.
We don't know the information that they have, but I'm assuming if you were to ask them now, with all the information they have now, if you were to ask them, I'm assuming they would say, hey, we should have operated on him middle of April, and he'd be back for the season if it starts on
time. That's right. They would have said, you know, if they had known that it was going to be a constant problem. Which is, you know, what the word chronic is means it's a constant problem that's not going to get better with any amount of rest. You do that surgery probably even at the middle of March when the Jets are more or less out of it at that point in time. Shut them down at that point.
Good point.
Get the surgery done and have them back healthy, you know, rehabbed and everything. Because with the wrist, you know, from what I understand, you know, you have to perform the surgery and it takes time to heal up from the surgery, and then you have to start the rehab to regain the strength in that wrist. It is his right ulno triquetral ligament in his right wrist.
Easy for you to say, Drew.
No kidding. Yeah, I had to practice that word a lot. But, I mean, this is a significant problem that the Jets are now going to have to face. And do you think that they maybe start shopping on the free agency market to see if they can...
I've always thought that Koliakov will be a nice fit, but there's reports he's asking for 3 years. So you're not going to give him 3 years. The guy never stays healthy.
Right.
So,
but that's he's really the only... I mean, there's some older defensemen out there.
Nobody else is going to fill the spot.
I mean, we went through it a couple weeks ago, remaining UFAs that are out there, and everybody else is a veteran guy who would be a, one-year stopgap, but he's probably not going to make much of a difference.
Yeah.
You know, but you're right, because Koliakov is the best. Everybody else there is 35, 36, 33. I mean, you're looking at guys like, you know, Radek Martinek or Michael Roosevelt or Pavel Kubina, and I'd rather they just stick with the guys they have at that point in time. although, you know, it's funny the way things work out right now. You don't think Mark Flood would be a phone call they'd be making if he wasn't already signed?
Yeah, true, but is he any better than either any of the guys would be in the top six? He'd provide depth, but...
Well, he would be their depth.
How much better is he than Derek Meach being one of their guys who comes in if there's another injury or two injuries?
That's what I think is going to happen. I'm not saying that Chevy isn't or shouldn't look to the free agent market, because I agree with Richie that Carlo Colaiacca was the one guy. I'm still surprised the Blues didn't bring him back, because
you can't ask for 3 years when you don't play over 60 games ever.
It's
really
true. I know he has had injury problems dating back to Toronto. I think that is the likely scenario. You're going to see, because the Jets actually do have some depth on defense, nobody's going to replace Bogosian. Zach Redman or Derek Meach, they're obviously not. They're going to struggle without Bogo there. But I would see Zach Redman or Derek Meach getting the time.
But it's tough when you talk about Redman. And, you know, they see good things for him also. Yeah, and you talk about NHL contracts. But you also talk about the fact that you don't want to really postman Redman at the same time.
And you also don't want Redman to sit in the press box as the guy who's going to be your healthy scratch on defense.
Also true.
It's one thing if it's Meach, because, I mean, Meach...
It'll probably be Meach.
We know what Meach is as a player.
That's right.
Meach is your... In baseball, there's the guys that they say they're the quadruple A players. Too good for triple A, not good enough for the majors. Right. You know, Derek Meach is that sort of guy. He's a very good AHL defenseman, but he's not quite an NHL defenseman. Mm-hmm. So he's your classic tweener in that sense.
And he's a guy that you can carry, but he's a guy you can carry on the roster because he can play forward. He allows you to maybe, you know, have that flexibility. Right. And he's fine, as you said, he's fine sitting up there and then popping in if there's an injury. He's not going to see him complaining. You know, he'll just...
Right, Rich, and also, if you're Kevin Shevoldayoff, are you going to throw $2 or $3 million at a Curtis Foster, knowing that Bogo's just going to you're going to end up having to sit him later in the season?
And what happens if the lockout goes until December, January, and he's back anyways?
Then it's not as big of a deal. Now, that's the question: is, you know, the timing of this whole thing? Like you said at the beginning, you know, Jets fans might not be that upset with a small lockout at this point in time. It saves them. From losing, you know, from playing impactful games without their best all around defenseman.
If there's a lockout,
it's him or Enstrom, but who do you trust more? I think the trust I have in Bogosian on the defensive side might outweigh the offensive upside a bit of Enstrom. When you look at the
very
team,
different, I mean, you put Buffalo in that conversation.
Yeah, but I mean, Bufflin's shortcomings on defense are so significant that...
But he's worlds ahead of Bogosian offensively, in my opinion.
Admittedly, I agree with you there.
So,
I mean, it's you know, there's no right answer to that argument, but you lose Bogosian, and I mean, he has the... If he continues to develop, I think maybe his future would say, if he continues to develop, that he could be their best all-around defenseman.
Yeah, very, very possible.
I mean, that's the problem. So this is a significant reduction from the Jets lineup for... the next number of months, as we'll see how how everything progresses, and we'll see how impactful it is, because now the CBA ties into that as well. Interesting point before we just go to break, though. This could allow the Jets maybe to get him next year when he's an RFA next year at a bit of a cheaper price.
Yeah, that's something to look at. I mean, you're going to take last year and then the half of this year that he plays or whatever it may be.
Definitely does not help.
I feel like they're going to pay him anyways, though.
I think they probably will, but I don't think that he can. I mean, you know, if he had turned into a really top flight defenseman, it's going to cost him a lot more money.
That's true. Good point. I mean, the GMs in the league though haven't really proved to use leverage, anyways.
That's true. They don't know. I think it leverage. I thought they've negotiated that they're not allowed to use leverage in the last CBA.
They don't use it. They really don't.
So. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll spend a segment discussing the CBA. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website where I'm reliably informed the Winnipeg Jets morning papers are now posted is www.illegalcurve.com. Special producer, special guy filling in the producer seat so far today, Remo, Michael Remus. How are you, buddy?
Pretty good there, guys.
Hey, Remo, you managed to be on time this week.
Yeah, my phone set the alarm, set it and forget it, and I'm on air.
Well, did you set it to on this time?
Set it to on.
How many times did you double check?
A few times before I went to bed. I was almost didn't fall asleep. I was so nervous that I wouldn't wake up and have to incur the wrath from you guys.
And well, you were moving last night too, so I mean,
it was a long day.
Well, how was the move?
Well, it was great, but I only had my phone today. I didn't have the backup alarm clock, so that made me nervous. I couldn't find my clock.
There's a lot of panicking going on. Well, anyways, welcome. We're thrilled that you're in that producer seat for us today.
There's a lot of panicking.
By the way, if you do screw up at any point in time, we will drive a bus right over you.
Thanks.
Just so you're aware of that, just so you can prepare yourself mentally for that.
Well, you already didn't play the boss into the last
I give him a pass.
Wallflowers, Heroes.
Yeah. Great song, man. NHL 2000 intro.
Who covered, who actually sang that song?
Dave Bowie.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, let's talk about the CBA.
Why?
Well,
let's talk to Remo.
obviously not good news yesterday with the CBA negotiations. You know, is this the, they broke off talks, or talks are recessed, as they like to say. You know, is this the?
But they can't agree on who recessed them.
That's also part of the problem. The NHL came out earlier in the week and they made their offer. The NHLPA. Really didn't respond to their offers so much yesterday as they did is rejig their fourth year of their initial proposal to the NHL.
Which, let's be honest, I'm going to get in here, Drew. This is what I think I was saying to you off air. I think the NHL players, if they take that, if they continue to use that method in terms of negotiating, they're going to start losing the PR war, which is right now they're winning.
I thought this was a bad week for the PA.
I thought so, too.
I thought that
the first bad week.
The first bad week, yes. The NHLPA has been winning this up to this point in time. I thought that obviously the NHL's offer wasn't perfect.
Nope.
But I thought there was something they could work with there. And, and I'm usually fall on the side of the players in these negotiations. Take what you can get because these guys are offering it to you. Mm-hmm. But the amount of money that they were willing to get, yes, it's a huge drop in percentage of revenue that they'd been getting last year. But I thought it got back to where they had been, even above where they had been in 2004 when this deal was signed. And at the end of this deal that the NHL proposed, they'd be back to today's level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, that is rolling back their salaries in terms of what they could expect to make, because each year you can expect to make more revenue-wise than you had the year before. But I thought it was enough money that they should have been able to find a happy medium and go from there.
As far as where the negotiations are at right now, I kind of almost think that the roles have been reversed a little bit. Not completely, but it seems to me that Gary Bettman has taken the hardline stance that we are going to roll back salaries. And Donald Fair is now responding back with, no, we are not going to roll back salaries, and he's not addressing that in the counter proposal.
Let me just say, it's not a rollback of current salaries. It's a reduction in the amount of annual revenue that the players are entitled to. And there is a difference.
And the HRR is redefined.
And
there's a difference.
And that's a big point. And Elliot Friedman had a good column about
that. You're right, Drew.
Is that the hockey-related revenue in which they determine how much the players get? That formula is redefined under the new proposal from the player.
And that's the big thing.
The owners.
If you can actually figure out an HRR, hockey-related revenue, that works for both sides, it might be 50%, but it might be including more or less, whatever it may be.
Right.
That, to me, is more important than the actual number.
Right. The number, anything.
Exactly. First, you have, before you can divvy up the pool,
to decide what
the
pool
have
is.
To agree with what the pool is.
And, of course, the NHLPA is not going to accept the latest offer, because when the first offer was... reducing that hockey-related revenue to 43%, and now the last offer was 46%.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing below, at this point in the negotiations, nothing below, 52, 53% is even going to be considered. We know that the number is eventually going to be, I think we all can sit here and say that whenever the season starts, whenever the lockout ends, whatever you want to say, the division of that pie, the division of hockey-related revenue, is going to be somewhere between 50 and 53% for the NHL. 53% for the Players Association. And right now, it's not at that. And really, the negotiations have stalled, and they're going nowhere.
And this is a problem, and this is exactly the problem. Now, we're on September 1st right now, and there's reports. Was it Dreger saying yesterday they may not get back till September 10th?
Dreger says that the real September 10th is the day that we need to start watching for.
They both deserve equal blame for the fact that they're, for whatever reason, not going to negotiate for the next 10 days.
Well, we don't
Nothing else needs to be crystallized. I mean, well, maybe they will.
Both sides have said that they're willing to pick up the phone if the other side calls, but it doesn't sound like anybody's going to necessarily be forthcoming with that initial
phone
call.
And this is a waste of 10 days that you can't get back.
And it's also something that, and it's worth mentioning, and we were talking about it off air before the show, September 16th, 17th, and 18th, are Rosh Hashanah,
yeah,
which is a Jewish high holiday, celebration. It's the Jewish New Year, and three of the four main negotiators,
right,
belong to the Jewish faith, and that they may not be negotiating on those days.
Right.
We don't know that for sure,
but it does bear.
I mean, at least one of the reasons why the Jets season opener, home opener last year, wasn't on the Saturday. Yeah. Was because that was also a Jewish holiday. It was on the Sunday, so that Gary Bettman would be able to attend along with other people.
So, and you think about it that way in terms of it's a couple of days after the deadline of September 15th. But it looks like they're not going to be. I think everybody in this room would be absolutely positively shocked if they had any form of agreement before then.
Yeah,
and we're looking at now pushing into the last week of September, and then it also depends on what you hear, right? I mean, there's some owners who probably want to get going here and make some money. There are some owners, and this is where the owners have the leverage, I think. The bottom owners, if Gary Bettman does vouch for them, is they don't care because they're losing money anyways.
The bottom 10 owners in the league, the guys don't make a penny unless their team wins four playoff rounds.
Nashville, Florida, Phoenix, obviously they own the team, Phoenix, Anaheim.
Probably Dallas.
Dallas.
Columbus. Colorado. There's a lot of teams in this league that are happy to not have to pay out a penny in not only player salaries, but employee salaries,
so
everything else.
Exactly. Then you have players losing money and owners actually making money because they're not losing money.
Right. And it's important to note, and we talked about this last week, and I've been speaking, when I'm talking to people outside the show, every game, every paycheck lost by the players, every single one is money gone forever. They can never recoup that money.
They're fighting for the next generation, quote unquote.
I think their first paycheck date is something like October 9th. That would be the first paycheck they actually lose.
So even if you're looking at a lockout and saying, well, these guys, the average salary in the NHL is in between $2 and $2.5 million, whatever it is, these guys, that doesn't affect them. Of course, it affects them. They don't want this, and it does affect them. That's why there is a lockout. The lockout is literally taking money out of the players' pockets to get what they want. The owners use that, and it is significant. Even if you're, of course, there's escrow. These guys are going to get money. They put this money away, and they're not. They are going to get some form of income, but. The reality is everyone's affected, and it's not just the guy that's making the league minimum. I mean, these guys are affected.
Let me ask you guys this question. Do you think Donald Fehr is really interested in cutting the best deal possible for the players, the current players, or he's really interested in really adding to his legacy to some degree as well as a negotiator?
Well, you'd hope that's not. If you're a player, you'd hope that's not an issue, because that's kind of been the Gary Bettman been stubborn about the Phoenix, stubborn about those things and letting their own personal feelings get in the way. What we can, deduce from outside. But you have to worry about that, Drew, and it's a valid question because, he represents the players. I think that's sometimes forgotten in the big scheme of things. So he represents the players just as Gary Bettman represents the owners. And so if the players, he gives the players, this is what you do. You give the players information, okay? You give them the options that they have and the likely results from those options. At that point, you say to the players, okay, you have all the information necessary. Let's vote as a group and see what you want. And then let's go with that. That's your job. You don't have to coax and push them to certain... You give them the information. You make the argument for each situation, both sides, and you give them the options because you work for them. They don't work for you.
If you're one of the players who's under a big contract, you're Ryan Suter, you're Shea Weber, you're Zach Parise.
Oh, you're furious right now.
Why aren't you signing? Why aren't you playing? You talk to your union leader and you say, even if you're Ron Hainsey, who's been actively involved, Ron Hainsey stands to make what, $4.5 million this year?
Cash, it's less. His cap is $4.5 million.
Okay.
I think he makes three this year.
But whatever it is, why isn't he? Why aren't those guys wanting to play hockey right now when they have a signed contract available to them? Assuming there's no immediate salary rollbacks.
The funny part about this is the narrative's changed completely in 1 week, right? Because the truth is, you know, in this room, I think we're more on the player side of this whole negotiation. The problem is when you don't come to the owners make an offer, you don't think it's acceptable. Then make an offer that's maybe equally unacceptable, but at least pushes you closer together.
As opposed to really napalming the negotiations with their offer from yesterday.
Because Gary Bettman, let's be honest here, Gary Bettman, you know, and Bruce Staubigan wrote about this, and he's going to be on the show in just about an hour. He wrote about it saying, you know, Bettman needed to kind of get that PR back, and he made the first move, and he made a little bit of a mission that they need to be a little bit flexible. And I think Don O'Fair needs to respond accordingly.
I think it's a couple things that I think, or one thing that I think is asinine is that the NHLPA is talking along the lines of a 3-year or 4-year CBA.
That's ridiculous.
I think
terrible,
that's absolutely
terrible
absurd.
Idea. Terrible idea.
I think, and they are beginning to. I think the public might be a little bit after, like you said, after the quote unquote concessions. Whether or not they actually are concessions is a separate issue altogether. But the perception is that the NHL has moved closer to trying to make a deal, and the NHLPA stuck a thumb in their eyes. Look, we both know how this is eventually going to settle. Yep. Every CBA negotiation ends with the current players signing something, and where they give up a lot is for the incoming players, the guys who aren't in league.
That's right.
The guys who are playing junior or college hockey right now always get screwed in a new CBA negotiation. The NFL signed this, you know, and as they should have. They, you know, big part of their CBA was signing this, you know, rookie, you know, salary guarantee. So they knew cost certainty for their rookies. They had a slotting system. This is what you get paid as a rookie when you're drafted in this level. This CBA will damage the players that are not currently in the league, because it always does. Because those are the guys that nobody cares about. They have no voice at the table.
Fair enough. But at the same time, don't you agree that the players who are rookies shouldn't... In the NFL, that rookies were making more than the veterans.
It's ridiculous. But we know that, you know, the current guys are looking out for themselves only.
Well, it depends on how long they sit out.
Well,
that'll be the answer, right?
That's true. I mean, it depends on how long they sit out. But, I mean, we know that if they're going to sacrifice anybody, both sides are willing to sacrifice the guys who don't have a voice at the table.
Maybe so.
I mean, we, like you said, we've said from the start, we have a fairly good idea how the finished product's already going to look. It's just a matter of getting there, and that's where both sides seem to be falling down on the job.
And I mean, you know, the players coming out and just saying this and that about Gary Bettman and all that, and Gary Bettman is has certainly brought a lot of his personal opinion into the negotiations. I think pride issues that shouldn't be in there, as far as I'm concerned. But them voicing this and that about Gary, this, Gary, that, I mean, that's not going to do you any good.
Like on Twitter, they
doesn't help the process. The process is already complicated enough.
And I think Bettman's done a service to his owners by putting a gag order in place.
That's right.
It's better for the negotiation.
If an owner speaks out about this, it's $1 million fine.
That's right.
But if a player eventually, you know, a player might say something, and what happens is it creates divisions in the union, and that's the owner.
Not only does it create divisions in the union, fans want to relate to players.
Right. They don't expect to relate to owners.
And they cannot relate to players when the players start really complaining about it, because at the end of the day, regardless of whether or not the owners are trying to squeeze them, which they are, and we totally acknowledge that.
Yeah.
But
I think it was Patrick Ewing who said, we make a lot of money, but we also spend a lot of money.
Yeah, and
nobody's got any sympathy for that guy.
No fans have sympathy for the guy who's making $6 million, who might go down to $5.5 million.
Yeah, and who spends $4.5 million of that frivolously.
In some cases, yes.
Yeah, let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up in just under an hour, Bruce Staubigan from the Globe and Mail. This segment of the program is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Monday night football, Thursday night football, the Cheer Bar and Grill is your home for the best in sports action. Be there this coming Wednesday at the Cheer Bar and Grill. The NFL season kicks off with the Giants and the Cowboys, and there's a good opportunity that you can win football tickets at the Cheer Bar and Grill this coming Wednesday, located at the corner of Stradbrook and Osborne. It is the NFL season starts on Wednesday as opposed to the Thursday, so as not to conflict with the Democratic National Convention and Barack Obama's speech on the Thursday.
Oh, that's why?
That's why.
Shout out to the Patty Cakes, Adam Pollock, Richie's brother, obviously, Andrew McKinnon, all the guys in the Patty Cakes. They had a good concert there on Thursday night. We had lots of fun at the Cheer, as we always do.
I was in bed.
That's fine. Well, you're a working man.
So are you.
Yeah, but I
Yeah. No, I already went. I had my rant about that off air. We don't need to repeat that one. There's too many curse words involved.
That's fine. The three, if the three of us were there, the 3 out of 4 is not bad. Well, obviously, Dave. Don't forget about Dave Manuka, of course. He was there.
You're here.
It was a good time. He's my main man.
I know. Anyways, let's talk about a couple of the contract signings in the NHL this week. I'll give the Ottawa Senators credit.
Is the conversation real?
As real as any of our conversations ever. I'll give the Ottawa Senators credit. They're the first team to sign a player since the CBA negotiations really got underway that didn't completely and totally violate Gary Bettman's 5-year contract max limit rule.
Why don't they just make it minimum contract length 7 years instead of maximum?
Yeah, it's true.
It's a fair comment. Kyle Turris signing in Ottawa, 5 years, $17.5 million, an average annual value of $3.5 million. They acquired him from the Phoenix Coyotes last year. Richie, you didn't like the signing.
Well, no. Hold on, Drew. Hold on.
Sorry, your opinions changed then.
I've gone both ways in the signing. It's an interesting signing. I think first of all, I'll preface my statements by saying that, you're signing a 5-year deal. You're taking a little bit more risk than I'd like for a team to take. So in that sense, I don't like the signing. He's signed for 1 more year. It's under $2 million, and then he goes to 5-year deal of $3.5 million. Now let's say this first. $3.5 million cap, it takes them outside the top 100 in the league. So you're not, and the salaries inevitably rise. So $3.5 million, it takes you out of the top 100. So you're really not paying him huge money, okay? Guys like Nicholas Grossman are making that kind of money. You want him to be your number two center. So from the Ottawa perspective, they say, okay, he plays a full season, he gets about 50 points based on his numbers last year with Ottawa. He makes $3.5 million a year as a second line center, maybe a little less more, in terms of points. And he's close to worth $3.5 million, around there, okay? They say, I think he's better than that. We think he can get 25 goals and, 35 assists. He can get 60 points. He can be a second-line center in the National Hockey League for $3.5 million. That would give them good value. The question, of course, is he that player? And I like Kyle Turris, don't get me wrong. But with 1 more year left on his contract, again, we get into that. 1 more year left on his contract at a reasonable salary. They're banking on knowing that he's going to be that guy and giving him that term, and then they're going to get value out of it. But if he does not turn out to be that guy, they just signed a 5-year contract, and he's got another year left, so it's 6 years under contract. 5-year contract after this year, if it even happens, for a guy who, if he doesn't meet your expectations, suddenly turns into a third-line center who maybe not be the best checking-line center, although he's not bad defensively. So then you have a guy for 5 years, and he's totally... fallen short of expectations. So there is risk for both sides. Risk more for Ottawa than there is for Turris here. Maybe Turris has a big year this year. He maybe passed up some money. Sure. But the risk for Ottawa is you just gave 5 years to a guy who you don't know for sure if he can handle that.
Well, I mean, they traded him. They traded for him, really hoping that he was going to solve not a lot of their problems, but things weren't going well in Phoenix for him.
Yeah, they traded David Runblad
for Turris. Second rounder.
It's funny though, guys. Of all the contracts that are being signed in August, you've got a lot of contracts where guys have a year left on their contract. Jeff Skinner, Taylor Hall, and obviously Kyle Turris is not in that category of Jeff Skinner or Taylor Hall. But yeah, you're right, Richie. I mean, Kyle Turris, he was a high draft pick. Was he third overall?
Yep,
he was. In 07.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of, he obviously went to the University of Wisconsin, and then he had a kind of, AHL with the Phoenix Coyotes, and we talked about it last year at the beginning of the year. He was just dying in Phoenix, and so Ottawa for him is probably you couldn't picture a better scenario for Kyle Turris. But it is a little bit surprising. This is one of those things where it's not really about contract length or the money. It's like Richie said, what position he's at in his career and why you wouldn't wait until after. And the reason would probably be that they are so high on him and they believe that the best is yet to come. And it has to be because his best season so far is, I think, last year was 30 points or whatever.
Yeah, he set career highs last year in goals with 12 and assists with 17.
And you play with Alfredsson a lot, so what can you do without Alfredsson? And that's a question too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the other question, I don't get me wrong, I like his game. But there are periods where you watch Ottawa, and I watched Ottawa quite a bit last year, and then he completely disappeared.
That's right.
He's invisible. So
you just give a guy 5 years.
Is that a work ethic problem in your mind?
I don't know. I think it's just a, you know, it's remember, he came different teammates, different environment, all that stuff. I'm not sure yet. I can say it's a work ethic. Apparently, he's been in great shape this summer. He's been working out really hard. So that's a positive. I guess, again, the biggest issue, guys, is with so many unknowns here, how much will you pay him if he has a huge year? And how big of a year can he have?
And that's where
next year, you're right.
My point is,
especially
so,
under a new CBA.
You have Taylor Hall, you have Eberle, who we'll speak about in a second, and you have Turris.
Yep.
Yeah. If even if you're right, even if he,
why not take the next year? And the offer sheet is very rare, okay?
If he goes 15 goals and 25 assists for 40 points, which are all career highs next year, is he going to demand any more than what he currently got?
His percentages are low, so that you expect him to go up a bit, likely. But that's exactly the point, Drew. If he gets a little bit more next year, maybe you pay him a little bit more, but you're sure, you're more certain that the investment is a better deal.
That's right.
There's so much uncertainty now. You better be darn sure.
Well, it's a copycat league, and all the rage now is to sign these guys to, you know, to multi-year contracts, you know, in the year before they become RFAs. And so the Senators are just, you know, it's a copycat league. They're just mimicking what other teams have done with players that are a lot better than Kyle Turris. Yeah.
But, Drew, it's funny that, you know, we mentioned these guys before, but with Jeff Skinner and Taylor Hall, these guys are the cream of the crop in the NHL. Those guys, you know, are going to be good. I don't have a problem with those guys getting five-year extensions with 1 year left on their contract.
They gave Skinner more money than Tavares. I mean, like,
well, no, but just the idea of signing them, not necessarily the term, but just signing a guy to a five-year extension when he has that 1 year left.
Fair enough,
it makes more sense for those guys. But with Turris, it's a little bit suspect. Why wouldn't you sign him maybe to a 2 year extension? I mean, 5 years is going to be still a long-term contract, and under the new CBA, we're not going to see contract terms at 5 years. That we probably won't see them capped at all. But still, 5 years is
they can't even agree on who recess negotiations. So.
Yeah, they have a long way to go on that front. The other signing this week was Jordan Eberle in Edmonton, 6 years, $36 million. Same contract that Taylor Hall signed, just for a year shorter in terms of length. I mean, Taylor Hall signed 7 and 42, Eberle 6 and 36.
You know, the Oilers bloggers are obviously pretty prominent in their, majority of them major in pessimism, I must say. But anyway, I mean, people have some concerns about, written about, you know, that Eberle had an exceptionally high shooting percentage last year, and that he got a lot more points based on when being on the ice as opposed to maybe the league average, all that stuff. Having said all of that, first off, I would have liked to see another year and see exactly what you have there.
Right.
But I think that overall, I think you have a player that has all those character attributes. He's scored. He's been in big situations. He's played on the international internationally, world championships, world juniors. Scored big goals. Looked great in Edmonton. I think he's only going to get better with age. I think also
this is a guy at least who was averaging a point a game last year. 76 points in 78 games.
Now, are there some trends that might go down? Sure, but he's getting better with age. I think he's only, you know, and I think he's going to continue to get better. And the players around him, like Nugent Hopkins, guys are going to get better as well, and they're going to mature. So I think overall, you're dealing with how many years? You're dealing with 3 years of UFA you're pulling out here.
Yeah.
Would I like to see another year? Sure. But overall, I mean, you can do worse on the contract.
Any problems with them, with Eberle and Hall making the same amount of money?
No, you create an internal cap unless Nugent Hopkins blows the doors off, which he can, and then I'll make more. But I mean, Hall
right now, the
risk for the Hall is you give Hall 7 years and there's a health risk there, obviously.
That's, his shoulder, yeah.
Right, but we know Hall has all the talent. And we know Eberle has a lot of talent. Now, Hall is probably the more talented player. But do I like to have seen both guys, you know, see a little another year and get an idea of exactly what you're dealing with before you sign these deals? Sure. But, I mean, you can do worse on spending it on a good player, I guess, so.
There you go.
And you also have to take into account the fact that all these guys are signing all these deals and these GMs just going to give it up. You know, I mean, you can pick apart a lot of these deals this summer that have been signed and say the general manager has generally given a lot of the leverage they have back to the player.
And one more point quickly, Richie, just on that, you know, sorry to cut you off a little bit there. It's not a surprise that that they're going to sign Hall. They were going to sign Hall and Eberle, and then next year they're going to want to maybe, you know, be in the same position with Nugent Hopkins, Yakupov. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to want to sign. I don't think they're going to be able to sign five guys to $6 million.
Especially if the cap comes down.
Exactly. And the one guy that is not going to get an extension probably is Gagne. And he's the guy that's going to get left out because they're going to have to be in the same position with Nugent Hopkins and Yakupov in 2 years. But you're right. They're deciding to give out these contracts now when there's absolutely no pressure on them to do it now.
I mean, think about the leverage guys next year if the rules don't change. There's no arbitration for these guys. So the only thing is an offer sheet. And an offer sheet, if you're going to be giving an offer sheet to Eberle or giving an offer sheet to Hall, you're giving up four first-round picks. That's so you have to have the guts to give up four first-round picks. And not only that, you have to have four of your own first-round picks. Yeah. So I think the possibility was very rare. Now, this is the one thing about the Eberle contract. If he has a great year next year, what is he making a contract? Any more than he's making?
I doubt it.
So then why not take the extra year?
You're absolutely right. But like I said, it's
same
these
thing,
guys
same
are just...
Thing. Same thing with Hall, really.
The cool thing to do is to sign them before they even get to that RFA status. And, you know, again, don't use your leverage properly. But that should be be the motto of the NHL general manager.
Isn't it unbelievable?
Yeah.
I think you fight for all this leverage. This is the main issue. You fight for all this leverage.
And the leverage is to be used in negotiations.
And you give it all up because you're too, I don't know what the issue is.
Quick on the trigger?
That's a good.
Anyways. It's
good figure of speech.
Yeah. Every week it's the same thing we talk about in terms of those signings. Let's come back. We'll continue with our winners and losers segment that we had started last week. We're going to focus on the Western Conference when we come back. But reminder, Wednesday night, the NFL season kicks off. Be at the Cheer Bar and Grill located at the corner of Osborne and Stradbroke.
Remo, you're going to get the Ace Ventura loser sound up for the next segment?
I'll try my best.
Okay, let's go to break.
I'm not so sure I like what you're doing back there right now.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven, and our fantasy football draft this coming Monday.
I had a great Carbone pizza on Tuesday.
Really?
Two pizzas, actually.
Twice in a week. That's
Absolutely.
Some good pizza. I'm looking forward to that draft. The back room there at Carbone, reserved for the fantasy football
draft. That's a great room. If you're having a draft, draft, football draft, baseball draft, there's a room there. Party room. I guess they call it a party room in the business. You would know, Drew, you're in the business.
Partying or of being in the room business?
Definitely not a partying.
Yeah. Like, am I in the room business? Is that the business I'm in now? Anyways, Carbone coal-fired pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done, and hopefully my fantasy football team will be well
picked
done as
well. Done.
Yeah.
And now, winners and losers.
We're going to continue on from last week. We'll in the Central Division, we'll start with the Detroit Red Wings. The additions to the Red Wings, or let's start with the subtractions, because really there's one name that jumps out there first and foremost, and that's the biggest one of them all.
Mickey Redmond.
No, Nicholas Lidstrom. They also lost Yuri Hudler, but Nicholas Lidstrom is the biggest subtraction from the team.
Yes.
They added Jordan Tutu, they added Jonas Gustafsson, and they added Samuelson.
Yep.
Really looks to me like the Detroit Red Wings are a loser in this offseason.
They are. I don't think there's any question about that, Drew. Now, Hudler is a good offensive player, never really got into Mike Babcock's good books, never really good defensively. I think Samuelson can produce a fair amount of offense that Hudler probably they have lost with Hudler. Now, I like Tutu signing. I like that addition on the fourth line. Speed, a little bit more aggressive, gets them a little bigger, and a guy who can play. The Detroit Red Wings like bigger, tough guys who can play, and Tutu can do that. Gustafsson has some potential, can be a nice backup. But the issue is really not up front. You know, getting a little bit older, and the issue really isn't in net so much. I don't love Jimmy Howard. The issue's on the back end. And they lose Lidstrom, who wasn't the player he was before, but he's still a great player. Mm-hmm. And not only do you have to replace him, but you have not replaced him with anybody. And so you've taken Nicholas Lidstrom, and you've filled his spot basically with Brendan Smith, a talented young defender. But
not Nicholas Lidstrom.
Not Nicholas Lidstrom. So if you weren't good enough last year, you know, you all played Nashville, but you didn't beat them. And Babcock said, no matter what, a player or not, we lost, period. You didn't replace Nicholas Lidstrom, and your defense sometime was suspect last year, and you're going to go in this year, and you're going to have guys like Ian White and Jonathan Erickson playing big minutes. You're going to have to trust guys like Brendan Smith and
Kyle Quincy.
And Jakob Kindle, guys like that. Don't get me wrong, there's some talent there.
It's not the same defense.
It's not the same defense.
It's not the Rafalski defense.
And you're getting a little bit older up front.
Yeah.
And the question is then, what are you? And I think they're on the downturn.
Detroit Red Wings, I think, are still a playoff
great system,
team,
though.
But and we have to mention again, also losing Brad Stewart. You've lost Lidstrom, and we all know he's arguably the best defenseman that's come around in the last 30 years. He probably is. Let's call him that. He's the best defenseman in the last 30 years in the NHL. Arguably the second best defenseman of all time. And now you've also lost Brad Stewart, who has been a huge part of that top four. So now you've lost three of your top four guys, and really now it's Nicholas Cronwall and a bunch of four defensemen. And so they're a loser in the offseason, but still, because of the fact that the franchise is so good at developing young talent.
Well, then they have young talent, Desi, in the system.
And we've heard that they've contacted Calgary about Jay Bomeister. They want another defenseman, and I think... what about Carlo Koliakovo? They got to get somebody.
They've also talked about, his name's been batted about there.
They offered him 2 years and he wants three. And I think he'll probably back down and take two. If his agent's smart, you take the 2 years in Detroit because it makes you look good.
Yeah.
In terms of, can you make more money on your next deal? Likely. In terms of the system, though, quickly, Drew, the question is, and it's a question I always ask, are the young players going to be developed at a point where the older players are a little bit too old?
Yes. Is there sort of that age gap like we saw with the Canadian Olympic team in 2006 in Italy? The old guys were on the downside and the young guys weren't ready to step up there. Could be seeing something similar in Detroit this year. Columbus Blue Jackets addition, Ryan Murray, Brandon Dubinsky, Artem Anisimov, Tim Erickson, and Nick Foligno, and Adrian Aucoin, and Sergei Bobrovsky. They lost Rick Nash and they lost Mark Mathot.
I think loser. And the thing
you
is...
think loser.
I think that some people... liked the trade and what they got from the Rangers, even though we talked about this with Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Blue Jackets beat writer of the Columbus Dispatch. There was a better offer on the table from New York earlier in the summer, but I always think about it like this. And the thing is, this might be better, going down, looking into the future, but you lost the best player. You lost the best player in the trade. You lost your entire franchise right there in Rick Nash. You're not going to replace him. I have liked Brandon Dubinsky. He's now their top player. You're young and you're talented on defense. The best thing to happen for them is that they have a lot of young defensemen in the pipeline, but
Richard,
I think they're a loser.
I think overall they're the winner. I mean, long term, does it help you play the best player? You don't get that many great players back? No. But in the short term, you've added about six players who can play in the National Hockey League. Rick Nash can only do so much for that team. They're going to have some depth now if they get some goaltending, which is the key, and they play a defensive style and add some timely offense in there. You know what? I think they're a better team than they were last year.
Do they make the playoffs this year, though?
No, but I think they're a better team, and I think they're going to surprise some people, to be honest.
I think they're a better team as well. They're not a playoff team, but they're not as abhorrently bad as they were last year.
And I think they still finished.
Just because they had Rick Nash, who's a top talent, and a bunch of D-level guys, now they have at least B's and C's in there.
Yeah, I mean, and that defense isn't bad at all. They can definitely improve. And Foligno and Dubinsky and Nisma, these guys can get you 50 points.
Yeah.
So they get you 50 points, and you get it's goaltending. It's going to be goaltending, and that's what cost Scott Arneal his job, and what should have cost Scott Housen his job. He made the decision to pay Mason and keep Mason.
Yeah, exactly. So. Nashville Predators, obviously they lost Ryan Suter. Their additions were really Scott Hannon and Chris Mason.
I mean, Chris Mason is a backup netminder in the National Hockey League, and Scotty Hannon's lost about two steps, and he wasn't the fastest player to begin with. He's a 6'7 guy maximum. You haven't replaced Ryan Suter, you've got significantly worse.
Not that you can replace Ryan Suter, but I think this one is a no-brainer.
Okay, it's a no-brainer. They're a loser because they obviously lost Ryan Suter when they clearly didn't play their hand properly and thought that they could still get him, which it was clear he didn't want to stay there.
Right.
He was going to go to Detroit or Pittsburgh, and he ended up obviously going to Minnesota. They're a loser, but I think they are a winner for keeping Shea Weber, just in the sense that if they lost Shea Weber...
They're a loser.
They were a double loser.
At least they
kept Shea Weber, which I didn't think they were going to do, but you lose Ryan Suter. They're going to be a borderline playoff team now.
I mean, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, things are not looking up for the Nashville Predators. So we'll leave it at that. A couple last teams, both of them didn't do much. The St. Louis Blues, they lost Jason Arnott. They might lose Carlo Koliakova. We're not sure yet.
I think they're going to lose Arnott because he's, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't really add anybody.
Langenbrunner's not coming back. They're the same, though.
I mean, they're young talent. They have a good base.
The top six is still the same across the board.
Yeah, I mean,
top six, top four.
Yeah.
So they're pretty much the same. And the Chicago Blackhawks really did nothing in the offseason. Yeah. So they're pretty much even keeled as well.
I think at the end of the day in the Central Division, it's not going to be hard to catch a Predator.
Oh, can't beat that pun. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.